Radio Lora.
Hola, mi nombre es Yara, vivo en Bilbien. Quería, sobre todo y ante todo, agradecer y felicitar a Radio Lora por la gran labor que hacen, una labor alternativa de radio, alternativa de transmitirnos mensajes de diferentes países y también de diferentes comunidades feministas, homosexuales, lesbianas, que se sienten representadas y hacer parte de ese proyecto, incluso de poder escuchar las emisiones más tarde, es un regalo. Gracias, Radio Lora, lo felicito y que sigan adelante.
Lora braucht Freundinnen und Freunde. Macht mit auf lora.ch.
Ihr hört Radio Lora auf 97,5 MHz. Wir übertragen euch Veranstaltungen, Podien, Diskussionen von den INAF-Aktionstagen 2024.
Ja. Hallo zusammen, schön seid ihr alle hier. Ich bin Mariam und das ist Mitu. Wir sind Teil vom Kollektiv INAF und begrüßen euch alle ganz, ganz herzlich an der heutigen Veranstaltung. Genau, dieses Jahr widmen sich die Aktionstage INAF der Frage nach kolonialen Kontinuitäten und wie der Widerstand dagegen aussieht bzw. aussehen kann. Dazu führen uns unsere heutigen Gäste in das Thema koloniale Strukturen ein und diskutieren mit uns darüber, wie wir uns dem widersetzen können. Deshalb möchten wir uns ganz herzlich bei Anna Sobral bedanken, die das heutige Panel organisiert und also mitorganisiert und moderieren wird und auch bei unseren Panel-Teilnehmenden. Auch einen ganz lieben Dank an das Übersetzungsteam und das Technikteam und auch besonderen Dank an die Zentralwäscherei, dass wir heute hier sein dürfen. Okay, dann würden wir jetzt noch einen kurzen Überblick über das zum Programm für dieses Jahr geben. Morgen findet ein Panel zu antiqueeren Gesetzen in Ghana, Nigeria und Uganda statt. Am Freitagnachmittag gibt es noch eine Grieving-Zeremonie für BIPOCs. Die Plätze dafür sind begrenzt, darum bitte noch möglichst bald anmelden. Und am Freitagabend geht es dann mit einem Panel zum militärischen Kampf gegen die Revolution im Sudan weiter. Am Samstag sind wir dann den ganzen Tag in der Roten Fabrik, nicht im Parki, und würden uns freuen, euch da an den unterschiedlichen Veranstaltungen und Workshops zu sehen. Die Flyer mit dem ganzen Programm findet ihr am Eingang oder auf der INAF-Webseite. Am Eingang hängt auch das Awareness-Konzept. Dieses könnt ihr auch online finden. Linke Räume sind nicht automatisch diskriminierungsfreie Räume. Das INAF soll Raum von Auseinandersetzungen sein, das aber mit der notwendigen Rücksichtnahme auf unterschiedliche Bedürfnisse und Hintergründe. Wir fordern euch deshalb alle dazu auf, achtsam und bewusst miteinander umzugehen. Vor Ort sind heute Awareness-Menschen da. Ihr erkennt sie an den pinken INAF-Stickern. Falls ihr euch unwohl fühlt oder eine unangenehme Situation beobachtet, könnt ihr euch gerne bei ihnen melden. Genau. Damit das INAF weiterhin ohne große Sponsorin bestehen kann, sind wir auf eure finanzielle Unterstützung angewiesen. Ihr findet überall im Raum QR-Codes zu den Spendelinks. Wir würden uns freuen, wenn ihr was beitragen könnt. So, ich glaube, das war's von meiner Seite. MeToo wird nun das Ganze auf Englisch übersetzen. Wir freuen uns ganz, ganz riesig auf spannende und kämpferische Aktionstage. Dankeschön.
Hello everyone, I will repeat it in English. I'm MeToo and this is Mariam and we're both from the INAF Collective. We welcome you everyone to today's panel. This year's focus is going to be colonial continuities and how the resistance can be against it. Especially today's opening panel, we will see how colonial structures are still in our present and how we can resist against it. And today we will be moderated from Anna Sobral. We thank you, all of you guests and moderation, for today and being here, and also for the room that we can be here in Zetwezet. And we will thank you. We thank also the translation team and the technic team. We will give you a brief overview from today's program. Tomorrow there will be a panel to anti-queer laws in Nigeria, Uganda and Ghana. On Friday there will be a panel to Sudan in the evening, but there is also a grief ceremony in the afternoon that is BIPOC only. There you have to inscribe yourself and there is still space if you want to join. On Saturday, we have panels and workshops and music program the whole day on Rote Fabrik. It's not going to be in Parky, so... and we will be happy to see you on all the next few programs. There is a flyer at the entrance where you can see more details and also online. We want to say a few things to awareness, especially leftist rooms are not automatically discrimination free. Enough is meant to be a place of debate, but with the necessary regards of different needs and backgrounds. That's why we call on everyone to be mindful and aware of each other. The awareness concepts are on the entrance. There will be a, there is an awareness team, and they are have the same stickers but in pink. If you feel not good or if you notice anything, you can go to them. Since Enough is not supported by any institution, we are relying on your financial support. That's why we would be very happy if you could donate something. There are QR codes everywhere in the room.
Hello. Hello everyone. It's really, really nice to see such a beautiful, full room. I am very, very happy to be here and have the honor of speaking to three people who are working in amazing collectives that we will also introduce tonight through the conversation and how these collectives resist ongoing colonialism. But also hopefully branching out to a general discussion of what it means to resist colonialism and what it means that colonialism is still ongoing. So as you heard, we have three collectives, Les Foulards Violets, from based in Switzerland, We Smell Gas, based in the UK, Brussels and Germany, and Global South United, based in Germany. And of course, not every perspective can be represented here, or in fact, in a festival, an event like this. But hopefully, again, we can start a conversation and offer impulses for more general discussions that apply to many, many communities and activist groups. So I teach post-colonial studies, and one thing that I find interesting is already this term post-colonialism, because it has been, as you might know, attacked from many fronts. There's one front in the beginning, early on, where it was attacked, the notion, the name post-colonialism was criticized by an Australian Indigenous poet called Bobby Sykes. When she heard the term post-colonialism, she asked, "What post-colonialism? Have they left?" And I think this "have they left" question is an interesting reminder that when we talk about post-colonialism, it doesn't mean that colonialism is over. And I thought this for me is also the leading question of this panel tonight, is what impact does it have to think of colonialism as ongoing, as something that isn't over, even if officially we talk about post-colonial nations and a post-colonial world. So, with that in mind, as an introduction of our speakers and the work that our speakers do with their collectives or within their collectives, I thought we could introduce, or everyone could introduce themselves and the work they do and how it relates to this larger theme of colonial continuities and ongoing colonialism. So maybe that would be my first question to you. How do you think your work relates to the larger theme of colonial continuities or ongoing colonialism? And maybe we can just take this wave and start here with Tariq.
All right, I think, let's get this closer. Can you hear me well? Great. First, I would really like to get this out of the way very quickly. I do realize how I look like. Please try to look beyond the colonial attire, colonial language, colonial mustache. It's a disguise, a very good one. So yeah, enough about me. I'm here today to talk about the work of one of the groups that I'm involved with, which is Global South United. Global South United is a relatively young political group. It was incepted, or it was born in the aftermath of the ongoing genocide in October last year. And since it was incepted, it has been very informed or responding to the surrounding of racist state repression in Germany. And despite what some others in our vicinity in Germany might think, our sole focus is not only Palestine. This is actually what we try to emphasize, what we think we are doing differently than other pro-Palestine groups, for example, which is to highlight that the struggle for a liberated Palestine does not exist in a vacuum. It's something that intersects with a massive network of systems of oppression. And I think the biggest proof of that is that the ripples of this oppression, of this colonial violence, is reaching us until here, until the very heart of the imperial core. I'm starting to lose the point that I was trying to get to, but could you remind me again of the question you were?
I think you are answering it as you're speaking. So it's really how a Global South United resists specifically ongoing colonialism. Mm-hmm. And just maybe a few examples, but I think you are doing it beautifully.
Thanks. So I think this also touches upon a very important point, which is that something that I personally also like to bring up whenever there is an opportunity, which is that the liberation of Palestine will not and should not happen at the expense of other oppressed people. Mm. So in the same sense, you cannot advocate for Palestine, but then coalesce or assume that it's okay to make moral compromises by working with people who support reactionary regimes, asset apologists, for example, et cetera, et cetera. And then this is, I think, one of the most important values that we try to focus on, that the liberation of Palestine will happen also when Syria is liberated, when Turkey is liberated, when Kurdistan is liberated, mm-hmm. and so on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi, everyone. Is this okay? Is this too loud? Okay, good. Hi, everyone. My name is Sausen. I come from the French side of Switzerland. Let's just say it's a completely different country, I would guess. Yeah. I used to live in Zurich, but I've never seen this place. I don't speak German because I refuse to. In a way, so I'm sorry. So my work, so I'm here representing Les Foulards Violets, which in English would be translated into the purple scarves. So purple scarves and not purple veils, because basically we vocabulary is very important, and we refuse to use words that are used against us as Muslim women. So as you might maybe notice or not, I'm a Muslim woman. I don't wear the headscarf, but I used to. And this collective is basically made of Muslim women or not, or non-Muslim women that wear the headscarf or that don't wear the headscarf, but that are standing in solidarity with the ones that actually choose and decide to wear it. So we are basically the worst nightmare of the right wings. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud of that, to be very honest with you. The idea of the purple scarves in Switzerland anyway is actually to give back the microphones to the people that are the firstly concerned about any laws or any discriminations that are happening to them. Should it be in the workplace? Should it be in the streets? Should it be in their educations? Or also should it be in their core identity as Muslim women choosing to wear the headscarf? We are entirely anti-colonialist because we are usually trying to give the floor to brown Muslim women and to give them their to give them anything that the West is trying to take away from them. So the idea of the Foulard Violet is really a continuity in terms of anti-colonial reaction, I would say, or even anti-colonial resistance, in the way that I think most of the people in the West see Muslim women as an extension of their own empire. And when Muslim women decide that it's not going to be the case, it gets very violent very quickly. Mm. And we're here to protect the Muslim women that need protecting in an environment like this one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Nice. Hello, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Hey, I'm from the We Smile Gas Collective. As Anna said, we're based in London and also Berlin and Brussels. I'm from London. Came today, and yeah, thanks for having us here to speak. If you don't know about We Smell Gas, we're a collective of researchers, organizers, and filmmakers exploring how the legacies of colonialism shape our present day energy systems. And we believe that an anti-colonial analysis must be at the core of how we struggle for climate justice, but we see climate justice as synonymous with our collective liberation from racial capitalism and colonialism of all forms. So it's not, a political struggle that's siloed into, campaigning about emissions or green energy, but actually it's something that is inherently bound up with the struggles that these two were just talking about. It's about, abolishing empire and racism of all kinds. So, yeah, I look forward to talking a bit more about that in this panel. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you. Let me first already throw a basic definition of colonialism into the room so that we can then just have that as a background. And I really just went, okay, dictionaries, how is colonialism currently defined? And I found a pretty straightforward definition. Colonialism is the policy or practice of acquiring full or partial control over another country, occupying it with settlers, and or exploiting it economically. So for me, there are three keywords here that I feel will influence a lot our conversations, and they are control, occupation, and exploitation. And I just want us to keep that in the background because I feel that those are the keywords that will anyway come up in the conversation. And this was already hinted in the introduction here of the different groups that very often this work of resistance that all three of you are doing, it directly exposes or reacts to or resists racializing practices and racist structures, so that othering of certain groups and creating a hierarchy between a dominant group that is mostly presented as white, constructed as white, and non-white groups that have to deal with that oppression that comes from dominance. When we think of specifically racializing practices, racist structures, and racism, I wonder now, again, in general terms, if you had to explain it to someone who is maybe not paying too much attention to the world we live in nowadays, and if that person would ask, well, why do you focus on the construct of race? Why is the question of race and racism so important for the work you do? What would you answer? Why is this one of the specific foci of your work? And maybe now we do the wave the other way around and start over there with We Smell Gas.
The opposite wave. Yeah, I think it's a great question, and it feels like a really vital starting point to this conversation, because, I mean, I feel like with any of the work or the organizing that we're doing here, in our case for We Smell Gas, when we're looking at energy systems, we're inherently looking at capitalism. When we're looking at capitalism, we're inherently looking at racial capitalism, because there cannot be a system that is built on the exploitation, the dispossession, and the premature death or disposability of people. That's that whole framework needs a hierarchy in order to exist and to proliferate. And so that's why race really is at the core of how our energy systems operate today. That's quite a short answer, but maybe that's,
mm-hmm. yeah. We'll take it from there, yeah.
In terms of, for Les Foulards Violets, in terms of racism, we really see kind of something that is quite interesting when it comes to women generally, is that racialized, I think, I don't know if that's an English term, racialized woman, like non-white women or perceived non-white women are not necessarily listened to in the feminist sphere. So that's why, for example, Les Foulards Violets, we were born basically alongside the, how do you say it in German? Like La Grève Féministe, the feminist...
The Frauenstreik. The
Frauenstreik.
Yes.
So we were born during the Frauenstreik, but because we realized that the conversation with feminists, or let's say the Simone de Beauvoir type feminists, was very, very difficult because they didn't understand the struggles that we had. For them, it was more about, I want to have a choice. If I like, the, obviously the struggles of the woman in life and the and feminism is extremely important, and the battle for the right of women is extremely important. But we need to add into that little differences when it comes to what type of woman we're talking about. You don't talk about a higher or middle high class woman the same way the struggles are for, like, let's say transgender women, or if you would talk about a brown woman or a visibly Muslim woman. So every struggle has its own spices, I would say. And when it comes to Muslim women, the number one spice is Islamophobia. And that spice is very strong in terms of its destructive capabilities, because most of the time Muslim women are ostracized from society against their own will, and they're not taken seriously by anyone. So when someone wants to just have a job, but they're wearing a headscarf, they would ask for that job, but people would be like, if you really wanted to work and if you really wanted to be independent, it's so easy to take it off. And I'm just like, would you ask that of anyone to take their pants off or to take their trousers off when they need to go to work? And the understanding of the struggles of Muslim women comes really deep into race, and into like the categorization of what's actually important for someone and what's not important for someone. And that kind of graduation of for me, I don't understand why you're wearing the headscarf, so for me this is basically not important, so wearing it or not wearing it should be as easy as I say you it is, you know, I tell you it is. And what's very funny with Islamophobia is that you don't have to be Muslim in order to live Islamophobia. In France, which is one of the most Islamophobic countries in the world, they've been arresting, it was like probably 4 or 5 years ago, they've been arresting white men with beards because they were scared they had like terrorist links. And they were like, I'm not Muslim, I'm just a hipster. So I'm just like, actually the perception of being Muslim or being linked to Islam makes you an enemy of society. So I think Islamophobia, as in terms of racism, is something that actually touches absolutely everyone in society. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that links up to what you would say, Tariq, also.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard the question about why race and racism is at the center of what we do or what we think about, the first thought that I had was, I don't know, ask white people. Mm. And the truth is, it is because white people decided that this is a thing. When you trace colonialism back to its origins, you would see how this whole thing started by trying to justify why it's okay to exploit certain people. It had to be a prerequisite to dehumanize those people first. And then you can then make this argument more valid, of course, back in the day, and also surprisingly until today, that if those people are not as human as you are, or are inferior to you, then they are not as entitled to the same resources, for example. And then you can justify exploitation, extractivism, looting, pillaging, ending with ethnic cleansing and genocide. And of course, at some point it was something as scientific sounding as, let's measure the size of someone's head to define how intelligent they are, or then scientific experiments on Semites to prove how inferior they are to the supreme race. And connecting it to how we see the imperial core now, and I know it might sound like a big statement, but honestly for me it's a very obvious thing that the ultimate subaltern now within this context, within the imperial core, are Muslims. And by Muslims, I don't mean only Muslim people, I mean the people that white people perceive as Muslims. Sometimes it can be anyone who comes from a Muslim country but happens to be Christian or atheist. Sometimes it's just someone who's, I don't know, unlucky enough to be, you know, a holder of a green passport. And I think, like, taking it from where Selsun ended also, how having countries like France or Germany, it's all brought back to that point that their values are different from ours and goes against our democracy and all of this nonsense. It ends up also, like in Germany especially, I find it very amusing how the trajectory of the German state and the discourse is very contradictive of itself, because a few years ago we could see that the Social Democrats and centrists were all like refugees welcome, like loving refugees, largest population of Syrian refugees outside of Syria, outside of the Arab world, and as well as also a very large portion of voters that I would argue that this is why the Social Democrats got the biggest portion of votes in Germany in the last federal elections. But now that they are not needed anymore, they are just becoming a pain in the ass to the German state. No, let's deport them. Let's even regulate the deportations and make them sound more valid by saying things like, they are anti-Semites. We don't want them here. And of course, the German masses are cheering that because they don't want these barbaric terrorists to be among their midst. I'm sorry, this is turning a little bit into a rant, so I will end it at this.
But let me then just summarize some of the things that to me came across as I was listening to you, what I realized, and again, what I find interesting or important to notice when we talk about racism and the construct of race is that whiteness is the invisible center. Right, because it's whiteness, and I think Tariq, you just mentioned that whiteness was created, was constructed at a certain period of colonial domination, expansion of Western European nations around 15th century. It begins, and then this notion of whiteness as the superior so-called race is created to justify domination, as you said, but it becomes invisible, and this is what I found so stunning in what all of you are pointing out. It is there in how cultural norms and values are enacted and discussed. It is there in the laws that are passed. It is there in the way resources and energy are extracted. But it's hidden. It's never talked about. What's talked